Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
I am Barbara, and I'm a grateful Al-Anon. I'm going to tell you three things, the most important three things you'll probably hear. It's number one, I've been a member of Al-Anon since February of 1979. That's a long time. My home group, if WSO approves our name, will be Serenity at 6. We meet on Thursday night at 6 o'clock in Roswell, Georgia, at St. David's Episcopal Church. If you're in Atlanta, y'all come. It's a meeting that was started by four ladies, and the four ladies that started that meeting all have a minimum of 25 years in the fellowship, so it's a good Al-Anon meeting. The other thing is I have a sponsor. Her name is Susie J. She lives in Dallas, Texas, and I have known Susie since I came into the fellowship. And I love this lady. She is teaching me things today that I want to learn today. And we'll get all into that because there's a big story behind all of that. I grew up in the disease of alcoholism. My father died of this disease. His death certificate doesn't say that. A lot of them don't. He had four heart attacks, a stroke, and the fifth heart attack killed him, and it's a direct result of his drinking that killed him. Now, he was not a nice man. He was verbally and physically abusive, and that's what I grew up in. And I grew up a fighter. A lot of times when you grow up in an environment like that, you will take on one of two personas. You will either cower and be the doormat, or you'll be the fighter. I was the fighter. I fought everything and everybody until years after I came to Al-Anon. I came in here like this, and I wasn't about to let go of that fight. And if you grow up in physical abuse, you will become a physically abusive person. I stand before you a reformed husband beater. In my case, he needed it. He could use a good whooping today, too. He's an ex-husband, and he suffers from this disease. He's an alcoholic. He is an alcoholic. He's a drug addict. He has the disease of gambling. He is messed up. But the one thing I got out of that marriage was I got two wonderful children, and I love those boys, and we'll talk about them later. But I'm a child of the 60s, and there's a few of you out here that I see that are probably child of the 60s. That was sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I had a great time. Thank you very much. I didn't miss any of that. I was a flower child. I burned my bra. I walked around. I picketed Vietnam. I did all those things. I lived that life. I lived in Venice Beach, California. That's where the debris meets the sea. If you go there, what you see is you see a lot of health food stores and stuff, and standing outside are people shooting up. There's something wrong with all that, but that's what goes on there. And I lived that life. And I loved it. I love being around alcoholics. They're fun. They will get you where you need to go and places you don't need to go. I've been in parts of Los Angeles that a white pregnant girl should not be at 10 o'clock at night, alone. Tell me there's no God. I know there's a God when I look at my life. I ran away from home at the age of 14. I went to the Air Force base. They all kept me for a couple days. It was really nice. But God protected me. I walked out of there with my virginity. God was looking out for me. But I didn't know that. The one thing I want to talk about, and the whole thing I want to talk about, is my journey to God. Because I believe, I truly believe, after having children and having a beautiful grandson, we come into this world, we are connected to our Maker, we're connected to God, and then we grow up and we get disconnected because life happens. I don't care what kind of life you have, you get disconnected. And I really got disconnected. And I've watched kids, and in my teenage years, I went on a God search. But I didn't know where he was, but I thought he was in church. God's in church, right? Isn't that what we all know? So this is what I did. I would go to the Methodist church and sing in the Methodist church choir. I'd go across the street and go to the Episcopal church to go to service. And at 8 o'clock at night, I said the rosary with the Catholics on the radio. Because I was looking, and my prayer was, please don't let my daddy drink today. That's what a child prays. Now, if you have children, and you're lying to yourself, saying, my kids have not been affected. They were two or three. They never saw anybody drink. You are lying to yourself. And you are harming your children. They have been affected. I have seen six-month babies affected by the disease in their house. They know. They know. So get them some help. Get yourself some help and get them some help along with it. Alateen is our great hope. It is our great hope, and it's dying. We need to stop it from dying. And maybe this is the start of that, I hope, this weekend. Anyway, that's that soapbox. Sorry about that. I'll get back to it, though. Trust me on that one. So I'm running around, and I'm doing all this stuff, and I've divorced this man because he's a lying, drunk, drug addict. And the one thing he did... And we all have a moral code somewhere. Every one of you have got a moral code inside of you. And I don't know what yours is. I can tell you what mine is, and that's other women. You married to me, you mess around with another woman, something bad going to happen. And it did. I beat her up. And I left him. I'd had enough. That was it. I was done. And I went on this quest. I dated four married men all at the same time. And I did that for, there's always logic behind everything I do. I felt I'd maybe been cheated out of something along the way, and I wanted to catch up. And I didn't want to get involved, so if they were married, I wouldn't. And if there were multiples, then I wouldn't get hung up on one. So there was some logic here. And that's what I did. And then one day I got tired. I called them all together over coffee and told them I was done. Thank you very much. I'm a fun girl, huh? Then I went on the quest to take care of myself, my two children, and work. I worked 6 days a week. The seventh day I spent with my kids. That was my life. It was going to be my life forever and a day. And everything was forever. Forever and ever, amen. This is what my poor life was going to be. You know, one of those. So I did that, and I worked for a magazine as a research director. Now, do not trust those people. They will lie, cheat, steal, go through your garbage, check everything to get the information they need. But they sent me out. God arranged for me to go do this story on a no-alcohol bar in Southern California. Because it was different. I mean, that's kind of weird. How do you do a no-alcohol bar? So I take my mama, because it's on the business, right? So I take mama, we're going to have dinner, we're going to look, and this guy comes up, he's the bartender, he's making the milkshakes or whatever we were drinking at the time. And he was cute. And what I refer to him was cunning, baffling, and powerful, walked over to the table, cleaning it up, and guess what? He's a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he's telling me that. And I'm thinking, oh, good. So I gave him my phone number. He called me that night. He came and took me to lunch the next day. He moved in with me that night. We were married 45 days later. And we stayed married for 28 years. So when God's in charge, even when you don't know it, good things can happen. But we had to learn a few things along the way. He was sober, so my idea was, oh, here's the answer to my problem. He's a sober member of AA. So everything's going to be wonderful. New sobriety is not wonderful. Sobriety is better than drinking, but new sobriety is not wonderful. It is rough. It is hard to learn to communicate. So we didn't know anything about, I mean, I was his fourth wife. Okay, fourth. And there was one condition of this marriage, and I did not love him when I married him. I had no clue what that meant. But I did have an attorney, and I knew how to get a divorce. And I'm standing there saying I do, and I'm thinking, well, you know, this is not a big deal. It's really not. That was my thinking. But he wouldn't stay living with me because I had a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old child. And he said it wasn't right because he was working a program. So we got married. And I didn't go to Al-Anon. I did not go. But I was... This was probably the worst time of my life. I was an AA wife. Now, an AA wife is somebody who just goes around and follows that alcoholic to them meetings, them speaker meetings. I would go and sit there. I would go to conventions and follow him around. And, you know, when you're not in this fellowship and you're following somebody who's really active and in the fellowship, I mean, you're like lost all the time. You people have this language that nobody understands but you. And it was awful for me. It was very, very painful and very, very lonely during this time. It was just really bad. And we would have arguments, and he'd go off and talk to his sponsor. And I'd be at home, dusting, cleaning the toilet, ironing. I used to like to iron when I got mad. One time we had an argument and he went out to his sponsor. So I decide to move all the furniture around in the living room. Then I turn off all the lights and I go to bed. And I'm in the bed with the covers over my head and I'm waiting. And all of a sudden I hear pop, pop, pop. And I went, oh, he fell. He's out there cussing because I have moved the furniture around. And Al-Anon will find a way to get even. And we're sneaky. You never know when we're going to get you. This was my life. And one day I was, the other thing that I did during this period is that he would speak. And I would go and sit next to him in the front row, and he'd get up and he'd speak, and he'd tell all these stories. And then we'd go off and we'd have an argument, and then I would repeat his story back to him about what a louse he really is. Now, I didn't live any of this. I didn't live it. But that's who I was. Hurting people hurt people. And that's what I was doing. And finally, I went to the Palm Springs Roundup one year, and a lady saw me. And that was in July. I don't know. She needed a newcomer in February, so she called me. And I was at home. By this time, my life consisted of the following. I couldn't go out of the house. I didn't have a job at this point. I had heavy gold lamé curtains that in the daytime you had to turn the lights on to see in the house. I didn't answer the telephone. If my husband wanted to call me and talk to me, there was a code. He had a code he had to use. And I only went to Little League and to the grocery store. And that was it. And I would spend like all day in bed and then get up right before he came home from work and do a few things. And I may or may not bathe. Why that man continued to come home to that, I don't know. I have no idea. It was not pleasant. And she called me, and she said to me, I want to come get you and take you to an Al-Anon meeting. And, you know, I was busy. My mother was there. I hadn't taken a bath. I needed to do the dishes, and she said, okay, you take a shower, you get dressed, I'll do the dishes, and your mom can babysit. Really? So this lady comes over to my house, and she's blonde. She's about my height. She's got on 32 pieces of gold jewelry, long nails, the whole thing, you know, and I'm thinking, to get this lady out of the house, I'm going to the meeting. I can do an hour at a meeting. I go to the meeting, and something happens at the meeting for me. Now, I don't know what they talked about. And when you're in a meeting and a newcomer comes in, do not change the topic of the meeting to suit the newcomer. The newcomer has no idea why they're there anyway. They're confused. Just go about, have your meeting. What they're going to remember is they hugged me. They were laughing. They seemed to enjoy life, and there was light in their eyes. And they asked me to come back. Nobody wanted me back anywhere by this point. So I went. Hi, baby. Anyway, so she came and got me and took me to meetings. She took me to meetings for a couple weeks. And we went to 3 and 4 meetings a week. This woman was a fanatic about this Al-Anon stuff. You know, but she drove me, she picked me up, she took me, and we would talk in the driveway when she'd bring me home. And we'd sit there and we'd talk, and I had heard about sponsorship. They talked about sponsorship in every meeting. Now, I didn't know what a sponsor was, but I figured out that I needed one. My brain was not that bad at this point. And I didn't know what they did. I didn't know there was an option she could say no, so I wasn't afraid, but I'd never ask anybody for anything, and it would get caught right here in my throat. We sat there for 20 minutes for me to choke this out, And finally I said to her, will you be my sponsor? She says, oh, I'd love to. Now the next morning something happened. Between the time she dropped me off, the time I asked her to do that, and the next morning, she called me, and she had gotten mean. She says, we're going to work a program of recovery, and you've got to get out of that bed to do this. And you are going to do the following. You're going to get up, get dressed, make your bed, brush your teeth. You're going to call me. Because, see, I was not capable of doing those things. And for a week, she had to walk me through my day. And that's how we started. And she took me to these meetings, and she drove me to meetings for about 2 months. And then she says to me one evening, you know where the meetings are. If you want this program, come and get it. Out the door I am. I'm going, what the heck? I don't even have a car. I got no car. I got two young children. How am I going to get to meetings? Now, for you ladies out there who are using the excuse of your children not to go to meetings, not going to fly with me. I would find a ride. I would call and ask for rides. I would call and get people to come over and sit with my children. Al-Anon members would come and sit so I could go to a meeting. I would go to a meeting an hour and a half ahead of time. I'd go in and set out the literature, get everything all ready. First person came in, I don't know whose job it was, but I was there doing it. And the first person that came in, I was reading literature and I had questions. I wanted to know about this stuff. So if you really, really want recovery, you can get it. There's a way to get it. And I went to 3 and 4 meetings a week. My sponsor was of the opinion that 2 meetings a week you stay even, 3 meetings you grow. Anything less than 2, you're taking up a newcomer's seat, get out of it. That was her opinion. They were not nice to me 30 years ago. They didn't say things like, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. My sponsor said to me, you need to shut up. You don't have anything to say that we want to hear. You need to listen to us. And she was one of those wrinkled up prune ladies, you know. I'm fastly becoming one of those, but that's what she was. And I was afraid of her. And she said to me, she said, you will not share for 30 days in a meeting. You will say your name and thank you, but you'd like to pass. So I did that because I was afraid. I was afraid they'd kick me out. Somebody'd tell, you know, because we used to tell on each other. And a sponsor, you know, my sponsor sponsored like 3 or 4 of us, and we'd tell on each other. We would report bad behavior. We're like a little kids, you know, with these little dysfunctional kids running around telling on each other. But what she did for me, what that lady did for me is she walked me through the steps of this fellowship. She got me to a God. Now I'm going to explain to you the way I looked at the steps when I first came in. Step 1, you want me to say my life's unmanageable? Okay. Believe that. Restore me to sanity. To restore something to something, it had to be that to begin with. I wasn't sure I was ever sane. Then this higher power stuff, God. No, didn't want anything to do with that. You wanted me to write down everything. My whole life story you wanted me to write. You wanted me to share it with the biggest blabbermouth in Al-Anon. I might have a flaw or two in my personality that I might want to change. And you want me to make a list of all the persons who have ever harmed me and go out and make amends to them. Then you want me to do something about prayer and meditation. Now, meditation, the only thing I had any knowledge of as far as meditation goes was my mother had a friend. He had a chair. He had a recliner chair. He had built himself a triangle that he suspended from the ceiling. He sat in this meditation chair in a special robe his wife made for him. And there was a case of beer right here. That was what I thought meditation was. And then you want me to go out and get a newcomer and take them to a meeting. That's what you wanted. This is how, if you take a sick mind and you put good information into it without somebody to kind of filter it around, and that's what a sponsor does, they filter and explain things, out comes garbage. Out comes garbage if you don't have that person. She taught me how to pray. My husband was a big book, studying, thumping, alcoholic. He had a big book study in his in the house. And those guys would be in there studying that big book. And I would go in the bedroom and I'd crack the door. And I'd listen to them. And I learned a lot about that. I learned a lot about alcoholics. I learned a lot about the program, listening to them. And the other thing they did is they did that third step out of the big book, like on their knees together. And I thought, I want that. How do I get that? So I call up my sponsor. I said, I want to do the third step prayer out of the big book, like the AAs do. She says, and I'll never forget this. She said, what do you need, an audience? Well, okay. I hung up, and the next call was to her sponsor reporting her bad behavior. Because, see, when I came into the fellowship, we did not have our 12 and 12. Our 12 and 12 was published, I think, in 1984, maybe 82, somewhere around in there. So if you had a sponsor back then, the only way they knew how to do the steps was out of the big book. Now, I know WSO does not like an Al-Anon speaker to talk about that, but I cannot share anything that I don't have with you. This is how we did it back then. We used Al-Anon family groups and the big book to work the steps. And I did my third step out of the big book. I did my fourth step out of the big book way. And I don't know any other way. We have a book called Blueprint for Progress. I spoke to the lady who wrote that book. And I believe today that it is good for one purpose for me, for one purpose and one purpose only. I like to cut it up and use it for discussion meetings because it really works very well that way. But for me, it did not get to the root of who I was and what my issues were and what I was doing. I had to look at my behavior. And when I got through writing that, let me tell you, and I did not take days to write my four step. I put my babies to bed at 10 o'clock at night. I wrote all night. At 7 o'clock in the morning, I had showered, and I was at my sponsor's house to do my fifth step. If you're taking any longer than that, you are lying to somebody, and it's probably yourself. I got down to it, did it, went and did my fifth step. And the one thing that happened out of there is she said something to me that nobody had ever said to me in my entire life. And I was 32 years old when she said it to me. She said, Barbara, I love you. And there's nothing you've ever done or that you ever will do that would keep me from loving you. That's what she said to me at that time. And I really, really needed that. Because I didn't feel loved. The other thing that happened during this time is my husband's got this big book study, and he was sitting there one night, and I walked in on him, and he had the big book out, and he was explaining his God to this newcomer. And I fell in love that minute. Because I believe we fall in love with the God within each other. All this is just stuff. It's the God within that we fall in love with and that we stay attached to, because all this equipment, all this beautiful body stuff, and all that lust and excitement will fade. Huh, honey? The mind might want to, but the other stuff ain't working. So you got to have something going on in your relationship that's more than that. Lust with potential is a good start. I believe in that. I believe in it. I believe in it. I believe in it. But you got to move past that. And we needed to go to people and learn how to communicate. We had to learn how to do things. God, I got to hurry. We did things like we didn't know how to apologize to each other. So what we would do was, I called one time and I got his secretary on the phone and I said, would you just tell him that this is a 10th step? Thank you. Start where you are. That's what we did, is we started where we were. And you know those nice little cutting remarks that you say to each other that are not nice? We used to do those. And so we started with saying to each other, that's an old idea. And it is. It's an old idea. This is somebody I'm supposed to love and care about. And I treat the guy at the grocery store better than I do my own spouse. Not right. That's not right. That's not a program of recovery. You know, anybody can come in here and sit for an hour and be nice and cool and sweet and lovely. Go out there to your house and be nice and sweet and of service to the people in your home. You know, people want to talk about our relationship's not 50-50. It's not supposed to be. You're supposed to give 100% every day. You give 100%, it'll come back to you tenfold. I guarantee you. That's what it takes to have a successful marriage. That's what it takes. And it takes the ability to say, I'm going to stand right here and I'm going to go toe to toe with you and we're going to work this damn thing out. And that's what we did. And that's why we stayed married that long. Because we were willing to go that extra mile. Because it's too easy not to. It's too easy to cut and run. So my husband gets transferred, takes a job in Atlanta, Georgia. Now I'm in California. I've been in Al-Anon 4.5 years. Now we're moving to Atlanta, Georgia. They talk funny in Atlanta, Georgia. My first phone bill was $300. Guess what? I'm calling California because these people are whacked in Georgia. I can't figure it out. And I told my sponsor, I said, you lied to me. Program is different. She says, the program's not different. The steps, the tradition, the concept, they didn't change those between California and Georgia. It's just the approach is different. So I had to get somebody to help me adjust to the language barrier. And they actually did slow me down in Georgia. So I adjusted. And we started having meetings in the home. You know, this whole thing started with meetings in the home. And that's like the place to have a meeting, as far as I'm concerned. And I started a meeting in my home. I had some ladies who wanted to work the steps. And so I said, okay. I had like 6 of them all at the same time. I said, good, we'll have a meeting at the house. We'll do this together. Let's go through the book, we'll study, we'll work the steps. Well, that meeting, Lori, how long ago? I have no idea how long ago. We had to move it out of the house into a church because there were like 40 women in my living room. And I couldn't handle it. So now we have 50, 60, I don't know how many women in the group that meet. And it's not an Al-Anon meeting, it's not an AA meeting, but it's AA and Al-Anon women. We get together, we study the literature, we study all kinds of literature. And we're there to grow spiritually. I believe our literature is really, really good. I believe the big book's really, really good. There's 164 pages there, that's wonderful. But if I want to grow spiritually, at one point in time, I'm going to have to reach out. If you talk to anybody long-term sobriety, long-term Al-Anon, they have reached past this to grow spiritually. And that's what I got to do if I'm going to stay here and give to you. I have to keep my spiritual condition good. We were out walking the other day, and we were just walking, and I don't know where we were going, but we walked by this beautiful church. I said, well, let's go in. It's open. Let's go in. We went in and prayed. Those are the kinds of things I like to do today. So we're in Georgia. Everything's going along. We're all doing our programs. We're doing all this kind of stuff. Got a problem with my son. I got a younger son who didn't drink and use drugs at that point in time, but he did like breaking and entering, you know? He was big into B&E, and he was very bad at it. He kept getting caught. And I hid him all kinds of places. I put him in a kiddie psych ward. I did everything. And it took God and him 5 years for me to let go. But for him to really take care of himself and get the help and get, I had to get out of God's way. I was running interference for God. I had to get out of the way. I had to go into court. And I want to tell you that last time he was arrested, the police like to come early in the morning. I don't know what that thing is, like 6 o'clock in the morning, they're out there, and I'm going, whoa, what are you doing? You know, and here's the police, they come in, they jack him out of bed, they handcuff him, they throw him in the car, they take him down to the police station, I follow. And what's happened this time is he has stole somebody's car. He's done so. I don't know. So I go down to the police station. I walk in. He's sitting there in the chair. And I gave him the Alateen One Day at a Time book. And I said to him, I love you. I'll always love you. But I'm not doing time with you. And I walked out of there. They had to subpoena me to court because I wasn't going. I was done, which was a mistake. His attorney, she made a bad mistake, I guess, when she did that. Anyway, the judge, who was a judge, a female judge who had 11 children, that was another mistake on his part, seeing her again. So I had to stand up in court and say to that judge, I think for his safety and that of the community, he needs to be incarcerated for a very long time. He was 15 years old when I did that. And my sponsor was sitting there with me, and I was holding on to her hand. She's sitting there, and I'm standing up there, and is everything I could do to stand there and do that. And I did not go see him. I went and picked up a child that was almost 18 years old from jail. But my husband said to him, you can do time or you can do time. You can make it work for you or you can come out a better criminal. Make a choice. And he got his GED. He got his cosmetology license. He fought Golden Gloves. He came out of there and he's a fine young gentleman. He's married. He's got a wonderful wife. He has a house. He works for a national company that have him on an expense account. He travels around and he teaches people stuff. I don't know what he does. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter to me. Doesn't matter. He's a good boy. If he walked in here today, you would not know that that's where this child came from. My oldest son, a lot like me, got that temper thing going. but he doesn't need any help. He doesn't need any help. And I just hope that he doesn't have to lose a family in order to understand that he's got some problems. I hope it doesn't come to that. Anyway, I'm married. I got my mother, the woman that I can't stand, you see. Because you always, the alcoholic, you understand what's wrong with them. The non-drinker, you end up, I hated her. Something wrong with her. It had to be her fault. Blah, 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 blah. We all go through that as children. So here I got my mother. I have to move her close to me. She's in her 80s. We're taking care of her. The people I sponsor are living around her. She's baking them cookies and giving them fruit. And, oh, yeah, Christy was her favorite, you know. Christy candy. Don't eat Christy candy, you know. Special dish for Christy. I didn't have any, but Christy had some. So one day her doctor called me and says, Barbara, your mother has lung cancer. And I said to him, okay. And he said, it's not something we can do anything about. And I said, okay. I said, don't call her. I'll go tell her. I got in the car, drove over to her house, kneeled down next to her bed and said, Mama, doctor called me today. And you have terminal cancer. And she looked at me and she said, well, that's the way it goes. And she made me promise her that she would not have any treatment. That was her choice. And I had to fight for her not to have treatment. I moved her into my house. My youngest son got married, was getting married, and she got her hair done. She got her makeup done. She dressed up. She went to that wedding. He got married March 17th. She died the end of April. So she was very, very ill. Very, very ill. And I had hospice, and any of those of you who know that, they come and they give drugs and they do all that stuff. And Mama never said anything nice about me, to me. She did to other people, but never to me. And one day she said to me, she says, I just want to lay down and die. And I looked at her and I said, I don't think that's happening today. And she got mad. And she says, well, I'm mad at you. I'll just wet in my chair. That's exactly what she did. So I said, oh, now I got to clean all this up. So we cleaned all that. She just laughed. She thought it was funny. And when it got down to the end, Christy came and spent the last night with me. And she's the one who gave my mother the morphine that she needed, because I could not do that. I was not capable. But Christy, the alcoholic, was. I think that's very ironic. But she sat there and we sat up all night, and the last thing I said to Mama was, Mama, I love you. And she knew it and she heard it. And because of you, I was able to do that. And Christy walked into my den and said, Barbara, she's gone. And Christy walked me through that whole thing. And then 2 years later, my husband goes off to a meeting. He's with a guy who he's yelling at, because poor M couldn't seem to get it. And Dennis would just yell. He loved to yell at newcomers. It was his job to yell at newcomers. And anybody with less than 20 years was a newcomer. So the phone rings. I've been at home in bed. The phone rings, and it's Am, and he says, I need to talk to Dennis. I need to apologize. He said, he's not here. He's with you. And all of a sudden, fear set in me. And I said, Am, I got to go. I got to go find him. I hang up. I get in my car. I drive around. And there is my husband, dead, on the lawn. Now, it was probably the hardest day of my life. Because I had my two children, I called them. The neighbor said, call your children. I called them. They came over. The EMTs worked on him. He was gone, and they worked on him. And finally, I went over to him, and I said, please, just load him up, take him. And we went to the hospital, and there were tons of people there, and it was the biggest funeral my Episcopal priest had ever done. There were tons of people there. Christy was there. People were with me. My sponsor flew in from California that day. I mean, everybody was there. They wrapped me up. And wonderful things happened over that period of time. The other thing that happened, and I think this is real important, this lady had been my sponsor for 30 years. She had no experience with what I was going through. None. And at that time, I had to seek outside help, which I did do. And then a couple of years later, I had to change sponsors. I had to say, this is not working. Because I was not getting what I needed. When I came to you people, there was one thing I really wanted. I wanted love and compassion in my heart. Because I was hard-hearted when I got here. I wanted to love people unconditionally. I wanted to serve people unconditionally. And in order to do that, I had to change sponsors. And the lady that's my sponsor today, I met her. I was at her wedding 30 years ago. Don't remember it because I was too crazy. But I had signed her book because she looked it up. And she says, I think you served cake. I said, really? I do remember going to her shower. And she was marrying a man with 6 children. She'd never had a child. I looked at her, and I said, you are out of your mind. I remember saying that. Today, she's my sponsor. She lives in Texas. I go to where the recovery is. I don't care. I go. I spent a weekend with her and her sponsor. We did a little study group. There was 40 of us. We got together. We were on her ranch. It was a wonderful time. She's very loving and kind. I have met a man who's not in the program. He drinks 2 beers. He's done. He never drinks after dinner. He is the strangest person I've ever seen. But he does, he understands service. But he doesn't know that that's what he's doing. And there's things about service, and I want to read a couple of things to you, and I don't normally do this, but I got this meditation book, and it talked about service and love. And I thought about him this morning, and I thought, he serves me and loves me in ways that he's capable of doing. I do not cook a meal. I do not go to the grocery store. I do not do laundry. He is serving me. He asks me what I need. And if I say I like something, within 30 days I have it. He is serving me. And when I realize that, I do serve him in my way. But there's a couple of things I want to talk about. You know, God has no limits to his giving. None. We can all have whatever we want. Just reach out there. The problem is I have limits in accepting. I'm not getting everything I should be getting because of my limits. My limits. And why do I keep doing what I do? And there's four, there's a gentleman that listed four things. I'm gonna list three. One, I keep coming to Al-Anon. I keep doing the things I do out of a sense of duty. I do it because it's a pleasure. There's nothing better than to guide somebody to God and see the light come on in their eyes. And I also do it because I'm paying back a debt for those people who sat in that room, who listened to me whine and cry and puke all that garbage out. I owe them something. And I owe it to the newcomer that comes in to listen to them. And in our One Day at a Time book, it talks about what a good meeting is. And I believe this applies to either program. And when I go to a meeting, this is what I'm to do. And it tells me right here to express my gratitude for the gift that I've been given. I assume certain responsibilities. One, to study and use the Al-Anon ideas, not only for myself, but for the benefit of the friends in the group. To be concerned about their difficulties and try to help them solve their problems spiritually. Three, not to take up the group's time talking about my problems, but to try to make everything I say reflect an Al-Anon teaching which will have meaning for those who hear me. And at the bottom, and if I'd like you to do me a favor tonight, before you go to bed, I would like you to look in the mirror and ask yourself this question. It says, we cannot drop out of human involvement without endangering our spiritual health. What condition is your spiritual health in today? I love you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.